I'm okay, and I found you, thank God. Who's Darla? My girlfriend. Ah, she nodded, accepting that last bit of information way more easily than the 3 truck wrecks or the fact that I'd been shot. Pleased to meet you. She held her hand out to Alyssa. Alyssa took her hand. Pleased to meet you too, but I'm not... Dad rounded the corner of a nearby tent at a run, Flash trailing behind him. Alex, you're... He crashed into me with a bear hug that forced tears from my eyes, both from my joy at seeing him and the pain of his embrace. Neither of us could speak. Doug, Mom said. He's hurt. Dad pulled back and looked at me. Jesus, you look like you lost a fight with a grizzly. No, just a truck. I pulled him back into a hug with one arm and drew my mother against us with the other. I wanted to stay there, to squeeze them both until they'd soaked into me and could never leave again. Even the stale scent of their sweat smelled heavenly. This is Darla, Mom said, Alex's girlfriend. She freed one arm and gestured at Alyssa. My name's Alyssa, and this is my brother, Ben. Mom looked at me. But you said... The Peckerwoods got Darla. Shot her. Something caught my throat, making my eyes water. I'm going back for her as soon as we get out of here. What? Mom said. You can't go charging into the middle of a gang. That's not safe. Before I could even start to protest, Dad said, She might not be alive. There's rumors all over the camp about those gangs. Say they're eating human flesh. I dropped my arms from behind their backs and leaned out of the embrace. Yes, Dad, they are eating people. They deal in slaves, too. But Darla was alive 3 days ago. Alyssa saw her. It's too dangerous, Mom protested. Okay, maybe I didn't miss the mothering all that much. If the Peckerwoods had Mom, would you go after her? I stared my father in the eye. I would. I nodded and tried to fold my arms. Just the attempt hurt my right, so I picked up my shirt instead and started trying to struggle into it. I've known your mother 26 years. I owe her a different kind of loyalty than you owe a girlfriend. I couldn't get my right arm jammed through the shirt sleeve. Piece of junk! I tossed it aside. It's a hard world we live in now, Dad said mildly. It's the same, I said. Exactly the same. If you knew what we'd been through, you'd understand. Guess you better tell us, Dad said. How's Rebecca? Mom asked. She's okay. Darla and I left her at Uncle Paul's place. That was, almost 2 weeks ago. Alyssa plucked my shirt out of the snow and helped me get dressed. Ben wanted to watch the guards, and Alyssa didn't want Ben to be alone, so when she finished helping me, they left. Mom sent Flash with them, instructing him to return in time for dinner. The fact that she'd mentioned dinner was heartening. When Darla and I had been imprisoned in Camp Galena, we'd gotten only breakfast, and not much of that. Mom, Dad, and I ducked into one of the tents out of the wind. My brother's still making out okay? Dad asked. Yeah, I said, doing great. We grow and trade kale. It's worth a fortune. Get port from Warren in return. Why'd you leave? Mom asked. We found Dad's shotgun, but I'd better start at the beginning. I told them about the house fire in Cedar Falls that had started my trek over 10 months ago, about my thirsty trek across northeastern Iowa, about skiing into Darla's barn and how we'd come to depend on each other, to fight together for survival, about the times I'd saved her life, the times she'd saved mine. A year ago, death meant I'd have to get my armor repaired in World of Warcraft. Now, it was an all-too-real shadow lurking behind the veneer of my daily life. I still wasn't entirely sure how I'd survived. My parents didn't interrupt much, but it still took hours to tell the whole story. I finished by telling them about Alyssa and explaining Ben's autism, which they seemed to take in stride. 10 months. Dad had clasped his hands together as if in prayer. It seems like a miracle that you survived all that. I wouldn't have without Darla. I'm going to find her, even if I get killed trying. I held his eye, making an effort not to blink. Dad stared steadily back at me. His eyes were hollow, dark and gaunt, as if the father I'd known had been replaced by a shadowed replica chiseled from the same stone. "It's going to be hard just to get out of here. We've been here, what, 4.5 months?
"Almost 5," Mom said.
"Why haven't you left? Rebecca and I didn't know if you were still even alive." I ground my teeth at Black Lake, at the volcano, at my parents. They clearly weren't getting enough to eat. Mostly I was angry at myself. Why hadn't I come sooner?
"You didn't notice the fence and the guys with guns?" Mom said.
"We did try," Dad said. "Twice. Right after we got here. We got caught, thrown into a punishment hut. I thought they'd let us starve to death in there, but Lester bugged the guards so much that they almost threw him into a hut of his own."
"Lester got us released," Mom said. "He's very persistent and a little crazy."
"I noticed," I said. 4 days without food and water when you're already weak is no picnic," Dad said. "I wasn't sure we'd survive much longer, so we didn't try again."
"We can't leave now," Mom said.
"Why not?" I asked.
"The girls need us. People started disappearing a few months ago, not long after I organized the school. Mostly young girls. Every 3 or 4 days, we'd get up in the morning and discover more people missing. Whole families sometimes. Sometimes just the girls. I had to do something."
"Your mother created a camp organization, civil defense, I guess. They call her the principal. Talked me into helping."
"People are still disappearing," Mom said. "But not as many as before. And we keep the girls safe."
"And the guards tolerate it? Your civil defense organization, I mean?"
"We're not sure why. Maybe there's 2 factions of guards, one taking girls and one supposedly in charge. We keep a low profile, but they have to know what's going on."
It all fit. Alyssa being kept as a slave, Darla kept alive instead of being Flens, the girls disappearing from the camp. I balled my left hand into a fist and punched the floor of the tent, getting nothing but bruised knuckles for the effort. I wanted to punch flesh, feel bones crack under my hands, preferably the bones of whoever was responsible for this whole cursed-to-ash situation. "I've got to go after Darla."
"I can't leave," Mom said. "These girls are depending on me."
"We patrol at night and guard the cleared zone around the girls' tents," Dad said. "But we can't watch the whole camp."
"Who's we?" I asked.
"The prefects," Dad said. "That was your mom's idea."
"And I convinced him to be the head boy," Mom said.
Dad sighed heavily. "You're the only one who calls me that, Janice."
"You'll always be my head boy," Mom said with a coquettish smile.
Dad leaned over and smooched her. Gross. I'm thrilled to see you and all, but I do not want to watch you make out," I said.
"Who's taking the girls?"
Dad broke their kiss. "We don't know."
"It's got to be the guards," Mom said.
"Probably. It's time for dinner, I think." Dad pushed himself into a crouch and shuffled toward the tent flap. Mom got 5 worn styrofoam bowls and plastic spoons from a stack in the corner of the tent. "They feed you much?" I followed them out. "Just enough food to keep us alive, not enough to give us the energy to fight." Dad kicked a clump of snow.
"They've passed out vitamin pills 3 times since we've been here," Mom said.
I shrugged. We walked across the camp, rehashing the stories of our individual journeys as we went. A row of field kitchens was set up outside one of the fences. Black Lake mercenaries wearing winter camo were filling bowls and passing them through hatches in the fence in front of each kitchen. Unlike Camp Galena, the refugees here were organized in neat lines. Flash waved at us from one of the other lines, and Mom beckoned him to join us. Alyssa and Ben came over with Flash. Mom gave each of us bowls and spoons.
"Be careful with these," she said. "It's hard to get more. I've got to go be the principal."
She walked off to talk to people in the other lines.
"I've got to get out of here," I muttered.
"Why?" Alyssa asked. "Flash said it's not too bad. They get enough to eat, sort of. Everyone has a tent, even if some of them suck."
"Are you crazy? Not too bad? Anything's better than being chained to a bed in the Anamosa prison. She glared at me, and I had to look away. I guess it would be, I said softly. I'm sorry. Why are you in such a hurry to get away from me anyway? I didn't reply. Darla, she said, scowling. Yeah, I'm going to escape. I just don't know how yet. I can plan an escape, Ben said. The guard pattern is suboptimal. You can? I asked. How? I have several ideas. I need to observe the guard patterns for at least a week to confirm their effectiveness. A week? I'm leaving tonight. You just got to us, Dad said. I didn't reply. He was right. But finding my parents hadn't fixed anything. It only made Darla's absence even more painful. If you attempt to leave without adequate preparation, Ben said, you will likely be caught or killed, and your mission will fail. He had a point. Getting myself killed wouldn't help Darla. But I couldn't sit around either. Couldn't wait while she was, well, the Peckerwoods. I didn't even want to think about what might be happening to Darla. Why they were keeping her alive. I can't wait a week. She's in danger. Maybe I could devise a preliminary operational plan with 2 days' observation. More time would be necessary to confirm and optimize it. How many people would be escaping? Shh, I said. We were approaching the front of the line, where a bored Blacklake guard slopped wheat gruel into my bowl. They didn't mark my hand. How do they keep track of who's gotten food? I asked Dad. They don't. We do, Dad said as we walked away, eating our gruel. That's part of what your mom is off doing. They cook the same amount every meal. If someone takes seconds, someone else goes without. How many people must I plan for? Ben asked me again. I don't think Mom and Dad want to leave, I said. No, Dad said. Not until I know the people we've promised to protect are safe. I'd helped strangers on the road, helped Uncle Paul and Aunt Carolyn on their farm, and saved Alyssa and Ben. But now, when I needed help, everyone except Ben seemed to be allied against me. I wanted to punch something in frustration, but knew it wouldn't do any good. Instead, I said as flatly as I could manage, I'm leaving. Darla needs me. Absolutely not, Dad said. We just found each other. We're not splitting up now. Just a second, I said, glaring at my father. I found you, not vice versa. And I owe Darla my life, if it comes to that. If we could put a stop to the disappearances, be sure the people we promised to protect are safe. We could all try to break out together. But you're too young to. I'm not some kid. Wait, what's this about people you promised to protect? Alyssa asked. Dad explained the girls' disappearances to Alyssa. He seemed relieved to change the subject. You need to catch whoever's kidnapping girls? Ben asked. Dad nodded. The goal of an additional operation is to catch the unknown people kidnapping girls, Ben said. Yes, Alyssa said. That is an easy tactical problem, Ben said. Prepare an ambush. Use whatever the unknown persons want as a lure. Would the sister unit suffice as a lure? No, Alyssa said. No way. Forget it. I'm no one's bait. Not anymore.
Chapter 62.
By that night, we'd worn down Alyssa's resistance. She wandered up and down a deserted corridor between 2 rows of tents. I listened carefully and caught fleeting glimpses of her through a peephole I'd cut at the back of one of the tents. Alyssa had dressed in the brightest clothing we could find, dingy cream-colored pants and a flaming orange jacket. She was a dim candle wrapped in an oppressive darkness. Or maybe the night just seemed oppressive because I was so thoroughly trapped, first by the camp and second by Mom and Dad. They wouldn't leave without protecting the girls, and they forbade me from leaving without them. I didn't think they could stop me, but I wanted them to come too. After all, Darla and I had returned to Iowa to find them, and I suspected I'd need all the help I could get to free her. Ben was still out observing the guards, preparing an escape plan. If we could figure out who was kidnapping girls and put a stop to it, maybe we could all try to leave together. Dad even assigned 2 prefects to keep Ben out of trouble. Dad and four other prefects were hidden in a tent near me. I expected the prefects to be men, but most of them were women. They called Dad the dean, which seemed weird, but I guessed it was better than head boy. Dad had offered me a knife, really a crude shank made from a sharpened scrap of metal, but I'd turned him down. There weren't enough knives to go around, and I figured I'd rely on my hands and feet. I knew a little bit about knife defense, but I'd never been trained to fight with a knife. That wasn't something we did at my dojang. My right arm was still sore, but I'd been stretching it. I would be able to use it if I had to. Mom hadn't wanted me to help with the ambush. She'd fought with Dad at length over it. Alyssa finally announced that she wouldn't serve as bait unless I were there. I hadn't said anything at all. It didn't matter what Mom, Dad, or Alyssa said. I'd helped talk Alyssa into trying Ben's crazy plan, so I needed to be there to try to protect her, regardless of what my parents thought. Alyssa paced endlessly back and forth. I'd tried to nap during the early evening, but I hadn't slept well, so I was tired. I started silently counting out the This Little Piggy nursery rhyme, tapping my fingers on my knee, both to keep myself awake and to keep track of time. More than 2 hours had passed when Alyssa stopped near my tent. "This isn't working," she whispered. "How long do I have to keep doing this?" "It won't work at all if you talk to me," I hissed back. I heard my dad's voice from another tent. "We're staying out here till dawn. Now shut up." His tone shocked me. Alyssa was doing us a favor. She didn't have to spend her whole night trying to lure an attack. Alyssa sighed and resumed pacing. As the night dragged on, her pace slowed. She dragged her feet, trudging as if she were more asleep than awake. I lost count of my This Little Piggies somewhere past 2,000. It had to be nearly dawn. I caught myself nodding and bit my lower lip hard. My knee was numb where I'd been tapping out the nursery rhyme. I returned my attention to the peephole in the tent just in time to see a dark shape collide with Alyssa's back. She fell into the packed snow and shrieked. I lunged down, sliding under the back edge of the tent. I reached Alyssa in seconds. The guy who'd run into her was reaching down toward her. I caught his hand and cranked it into a wrist throw. He cried out, and I stepped forward, over Alyssa, hooking my leg behind his and tossing him to the ground. We were surrounded by my dad and the prefects now, but I didn't need any help. I allowed myself to fall on top of the guy, placing my elbow against his throat. He made a hoarse, choking sound. Dad shook a little hand-powered flashlight, a rare luxury someone had smuggled into the camp and given to the dean. He shined the beam on the guy's face. One of the prefects helped Alyssa stand. "I think I recognize him," Dad said. "Let up a little, would you?" I took some of the pressure off the guy's neck. He started coughing and shaking. I could feel his neck convulse against my forearm. When he finished coughing, he began cussing, running through pretty much every one of the words I'd looked up in the American Heritage Dictionary in third grade. "Shut up," Dad barked. I'd never heard him say shut up in my life. And now he'd said it twice in one night. "What are you doing out here?" "That you, Doug?" "Yeah, Deke, it's me. What are you doing out here?" "Needed to piss something fierce. Ain't any camp rule against an old man going to the latrine, is there? Anyway, this kid scared it right out of me." I felt dampness against my hip where I was lying on top of him and caught a whiff of urine. Great. I scrambled up. Dad reached down to help him up. "Sorry, Deke," Dad said gruffly. "Thought you were trying to abduct this girl." "Well, sorry I ran her over. Too blasted dark to see anything at night." "That's the truth. Look, Deke, don't tell anyone we're out here. You don't think it's one of us taking them girls, do you?" "Don't know. Could be. There were psychos in the world before the volcano. Still are, I figure." Deke's hands were pressed over his groin. "Okay. I'll keep it quiet." "Pack it in for the night," Dad said to all of us. "It's almost dawn, anyway." Alyssa stepped toward me, holding her side. "You okay?" I asked. "Yeah," she said. "Just sore from falling. Walk with me? At least as far as your tent?" "Sure," I said. Alyssa grabbed my arm for support, and we trudged away in silence. I was too tired to start a conversation, and maybe Alyssa was too. It felt like a companionable silence, with her leaning against my arm, both of us recovering from a long and tense night. By the time we got to Dad's tent, the sky was starting to lighten. Alyssa turned to face me. I saw Dad following us. During the day, Dad used the tent. Mom and another woman slept there at night while Dad patrolled. I cracked open the flap and glanced in. It was empty. Dad told me that Mom often left before dawn to fulfill her duties as the principal. "I think I'll lie down," I said.
"Me too," Dad said. "I'm beat."
"Can I talk to Alex? Alone?" Alyssa gestured at the tent. Dad was quiet for a moment as he looked at her.
"Yeah, I'll find somewhere else to nap."
"Thanks." Alyssa pulled the tent flap aside and crawled in. It was more than a little annoying. Didn't I get any say over who got to share my tent? I turned to follow Alyssa. Dad caught my arm.
"Alex, you did good."
"Thanks." I started to turn away again, but he held on.
"What you do is your business, but, we lost one woman in childbirth already."
I had to suppress a groan. Uncle Paul had lectured me literally ad nauseam on this subject last year. "We're just going to talk. Besides, Darla and I..."
"I know. It's okay." Dad pulled me into a brief hug. "I'll come get you before they quit serving breakfast. You can talk for an hour and a half, maybe two."
I rolled my eyes at him and crawled into the tent. Alyssa was sitting on a makeshift pile of rags and blankets. Her jacket was off. As I entered, she was pulling her sweater off. She stretched sinuously, thrusting her chest out. I couldn't help but stare. When her head popped free of the sweater, Alyssa caught me staring and smiled. I moved my focus back to her face, but it nearly took more willpower than I had to succeed. "What did you want to talk about?" I asked.
"When that guy, Deke, ran into me, you were the first one there."
Under the sweater, Alyssa had on a heavy, long-sleeved flannel shirt. Not in the least bit sexy, until she started slowly unbuttoning it.
"I was trying to stay alert. That's really distracting."
As Alyssa unbuttoned the flannel shirt, its plackets fell open, revealing a form-fitting, lacy, scarlet shirt beneath it.
"What, this?"
She took a deep breath.
Yeah.
I reached one hand out to her collar and held her overshirt closed. She placed a hand over mine.
"That guy didn't stand a chance. He was a foot taller and probably 50 pounds heavier, and you took him down with one move."
I shrugged. I could pull my hand away from hers, but then her overshirt would fall open again. A growing part of me wanted to let go of her shirt and not pull away, let it fall open and see what would happen next.
"You could have killed him."
"I wouldn't." She lifted my pointer finger and took it between her lips, biting gently. The supple warmth of her lips drove whatever I had been about to say from my mind. She cupped her other hand behind my neck, pulling me closer. I was clay, moldable into whatever shape Alyssa wanted. She released my finger from between her teeth and moved my hand, sliding it beneath her overshirt until it rested on her left breast.
"Alyssa, I..."
She bent forward and kissed me. Suddenly, I was kissing her back, and she moaned, and my hand clutched at her breast, far harder than Darla would have liked.
"Darla."
I pushed Alyssa away, a little harder than I meant to. She rocked back on the bedding.
"What?"
she said.
"I don't want... I can clearly see that you do want."
She reached, and I grabbed her wrist, stopping her hand inches from my groin.
"Yeah, look, he does what he wants to, not what I tell him to."
I moved her hand farther from the, body part in question.
"But I love Darla."
Her lips formed an insanely hot pout.
"You can still love her. I wasn't proposing marriage, you know."
I shook my head sadly.
I can't. It's not like she'd ever know. Even if you do find her. Even if you don't get killed. I'd know.
Alyssa's face crumpled.
You could learn to love me, she whispered, her eyes brimming with sudden tears.
Maybe I could have if I'd met you first. But I didn't, I said more gently.
A tear left a glistening trail down her cheek. What was going on? Her mood shifted gears faster than a NASCAR driver in traffic. I was a jumble. Horny, guilty for making her cry, and angry that she'd put me in this position, all at the same time.
It's okay, I said, hugging her in what I hoped was a brotherly fashion. Don't cry. That made her start sobbing for real. I held her and patted her back until her crying fit ran out. When she seemed calmer, I started buttoning her overshirt back up.
I'm sorry, Alyssa said. I'm not really a slut or anything. I never said you were. Ben and me, we've been on our own for 5 months, ever since Mom and Dad were killed, and it's, I don't know, I feel maybe lonely sometimes. I mean, I love my brother, but it's just the two of us. And sometimes I could get the Peckerwoods to do stuff for me if I did stuff for them, but that wasn't... I only got more lonely. And so I thought that you and me, it would be great to have something real.
You do have something real. I clasped her hand in mine. We're friends, okay?
Okay.
Alyssa pulled her sweater back on. Do you think maybe I could stay here while we nap? Just as friends? Yeah, that'd be okay, I guess. I lay down on my back on Dad's bedroll. Alyssa snuggled against my side, one hand flung over my chest. In seconds, her breathing evened and slowed. I lay awake, staring at the canvas ceiling, until Dad called us for breakfast.
Chapter 63. I finally got a few hours of fitful sleep after breakfast. A draft of frozen air woke me, and I peered out from under my bedding, bleary-eyed. My mother was holding the tent flap open and peeking in.
Sorry, she said. I didn't mean to wake you.
It's okay. I wasn't sleeping that well anyway.
I had to just look at you to make sure I didn't dream up yesterday.
I'm too sore to be part of your dream, Mom. I pushed aside the layers of blankets and reached for my overcoat. Mom brought me a pail of water so cold that a rim of ice had already formed at its edges. I brushed my teeth with Dad's toothbrush. Icy spikes of cold stabbed my hands and face as I washed. When I finished, Mom took me to see her school. Several clear plastic tarps were hung from poles in the center of the camp, forming a rough tent about 15 feet square. Mom pushed aside the corner of the plastic and gestured for me to enter. Inside, about a dozen students, mostly girls, sat in a circle around the perimeter of the tent. A rangy, gray-haired woman stood in the center, reading from a warped copy of To Kill a Mockingbird.
Melba, Mom said, this is my son, Alex.
The woman looked up.
Pleased to meet you. Will you be joining our class?
I've already read that book, I said.
If you don't mind, Mom said, addressing Melba, maybe Alex could teach this section. A self-defense seminar? He's got a black belt in Taekwondo.
Certainly. Melba closed and pocketed her book.
You could have given me a little warning, I whispered to Mom. You'll do fine.
I stepped into the center of the makeshift room. Saved by the sub, huh? There's nothing more boring than English. I looked around. Nobody was smiling. Melba stared daggers at me.
Let's welcome Mr. Halpern properly, she said, extending her hand.
I reached to shake her hand, but she clasped my thumb instead and did a little stutter step, moving closer to me and bending my arm. Her other hand grabbed my elbow. Her foot hooked mine, and suddenly I was flat on my back staring up at her.
That, Melba said, is what is colloquially referred to as a chicken wing. My English classes are not boring, Mr. Halpern, and I also teach a judo seminar. A chuckle passed around the room, and I felt my face flush.
"Sorry, I should have warned you," Mom said.
Melba held out her hand to help me up, but I rolled instead, coming up in a defensive stance.
"Good throw," I said. "You know the counter?"
Melba nodded.
"Let's demonstrate it."
I held out my hand again, and we worked through the counter move in slow motion. Taekwondo doesn't emphasize throws the way judo does, so Melba was better at them, but now that I was prepared, I mostly held my own. Soon I was into the rhythm of the class, demonstrating moves with Melba, coaching students, and pairing them off to practice. I called a short break after about a half an hour.
"I've got to go check on the other classes," Mom said.
"There are more?"
"Dozens. We do martial arts in here since it's the biggest space we have. I call it the LGI.
"LGI?
Large group instruction," Mom snorted.
"See you at dinner."
We repeated the ambush that night using Alyssa's bait again. It was mind-numbingly boring. I had to fight to stay alert all night, and absolutely nothing happened.
Ben had spent the night observing the guards. He joined Dad, Alyssa, and me as we were getting ready for breakfast.
"Did you figure out an escape plan?" I asked Ben.
"Yes, but I need more time to observe the guards and confirm it will work flawlessly."
"I don't have more time."
My brain was stuck in a loop, thinking that Darla might not have more time either.
"We've been over this," Dad said. "You might never find her. You might get killed trying. Our family is going to stick together."
"I know, but there's the minor problem of the fence, razor wire, and guards, too," Alyssa said.
"It is not a significant problem," Ben said. "The guard pattern has vulnerabilities, and with a simple weighted canvas sling, the razor wire can be defeated. There is a device purpose-built for that precisely that..."
Ben kept talking. I figured he might never shut up, so I talked over him.
"Dad, I'm going to leave. If you want us to stay together, you're welcome to come along."
"That's not going to happen. Your mother and I have a responsibility here. We're going to do whatever we can to protect these people. Whatever that takes."
Dad was practically yelling at me, talking far louder than needed to be heard over Ben.
"It's useless anyway," Alyssa said. "Walking around all night, freezing my ass off. This is never going to work."
Ben interrupted his own discourse on methods for breaching fences.
"It will work. Statistically, it's not likely to work on any given night, but with enough trial runs, it's virtually certain to succeed."
"Whatever, computer boy. I'm going to get a decent night's sleep tonight for once."
She wheeled around and stomped towards the breakfast line.
Ben's hands were fluttering at his side.
"No, no, no, no. The sister unit must complete Ben's plan."
"Jesus, Ben, it's not always about you," she yelled over her shoulder.
I'd never seen her diss her brother like that before.
Dad was staring, eyes moving from Alyssa to Ben as if he were watching a tennis match.
Ben started screaming in that high-pitched monotone of his. He lashed out, and his fist hit the side of his own head with a thud. I reached for his arm, trying to stop him from hurting himself. When I touched his arm, he punched wildly. I jumped back, and his forearm swished through the air where my head had been. His foot connected with the tent, tearing away one of its ropes from the canvas. People shouted from within, and Ben fell, tripped by his own kick, arms and legs still wildly flailing. Dad grabbed Ben, trying to hold him down. But Dad had trouble even getting a firm grip. Ben thrashed with the insane violence of a fish just tossed in the bottom of a boat. Plus, he was bigger than Dad. Ben wasn't exactly throwing a temper tantrum. He was too violent and uncontrolled for that. When he fell, he didn't throw out his arms or protect his head. He never looked to see if we were watching. I doubted if he was even aware of any of us by that point. He seemed utterly out of control.
Suddenly, Alyssa was back. She threw herself on top of Ben. She was like a cowboy on a bull at a rodeo. It'd be a miracle if she survived 8 seconds.
"Let go of him," she screamed. "Don't touch him. It'll only make it worse."
That seemed odd. She was lying on top of him. That didn't count as touching. But I figured she knew her brother better than any of us, so I pulled Dad off Ben.
Alyssa clung to Ben. Her voice dropped to a measured whisper. It's okay, Ben. We'll keep trying your plan. You need to calm down.
Ben kept thrashing, almost throwing off Alyssa.
I was afraid she'd get hurt.
When my little sister had thrown temper tantrums, the moment she got what she wanted, the tantrum was over.
This was different.
Alyssa brushed her glove along Ben's side, whispering at him in an impossibly calm voice.
Gradually, Ben quieted. It took 15 or 20 minutes more, but eventually Alyssa got off him, he stood up and brushed the snow off his clothing, and we went on as if absolutely nothing had happened.
I turned to my father. One more night, then I'm leaving, with or without your help. Dad's only reply was a scowl. We moved our ambush spot that night. I was so sick of chanting "this little piggy" that I thought I might puke. I tried Hickory Dickory Dock for a while, and then switched to counting 1 Mississippi, 2 Mississippi, 500 Mississippi, 1,000 Mississippi. I figured it was taking me a second just to say the numbers at that point, so I dropped the Mississippis too. Sometime after 4 a.m., I just reached 21,300 in my count. Everything changed. A group of shadows slipped out from between the tents behind Alyssa. Then a hand reached around her face, clamping over her mouth.
Chapter 64. I burst from under the tent in an explosive lunge, reaching the closest of the attackers in seconds. 4 black-clad shapes had surrounded Alyssa. One of them was turning my way. I swept his legs from under him with a round kick and hit him in the side of the head with a right back fist as he fell. Even as my back fist connected, I was reaching toward the next one with a left uppercut in the stomach and launching a side kick at a 3rd attacker. Suddenly it was all over. Dad and his 4 prefects swarmed over the attackers. There were 6 of us and 4 of them, and we'd taken them by surprise from behind. They all went down. Someone produced a hank of rope and started tying their hands behind their backs.
"You okay?" I asked Alyssa.
Yeah.
She was shaking.
I hugged her.
"You did good," I whispered.
"You too."
Her cheeks were wet as she cried soundlessly. The prefects had hauled all the bandits to their feet. Everyone seemed to be okay, other than some bruises.
"What will you do with them?" Alyssa asked Dad.
"Find out who they are, how they got into the camp, figure out how to stop them, if we can." We'd started walking back toward the center of the camp, the tied bandits in tow.
"You think it'd be okay if I went to lie down?" Alyssa asked.
"Yeah, I think that'd be fine," Dad replied. I caught her hand and squeezed it.
"You did good. You were brave."
"I don't feel brave, but thanks." Dad directed that each of the bandits be held separately. I followed him as he pushed one of the guys into a tent big enough to stand up in. After a moment, we were joined by one of the prefects, Amy Jones, who took the shake light from Dad. Dad stood behind a bandit, holding his bound arms. "Search him," Dad ordered. It was strange to hear him giving orders, as if he'd been replaced by a different man who looked like my father. Amy was holding the flashlight, so it fell to me to do the search. I started at his neck, working my way down. When I patted the guy's right ankle, I felt a long, slender shape under his pant leg. He kicked without warning, aiming for my face. I got my hand between his foot and my head, but the force of the kick still knocked me backward. Dad hauled up on his arm so hard I heard his shoulders crack. The guy moaned, and Dad said, "Kick my son again, and I'll break your arms off and ram them down your throat." The guy fell quiet, and I rolled back to my feet.
"I'm fine. Thanks for asking," I said.
"Get on with it," Dad snapped. I pulled up the bandit's pant leg and extracted a wicked knife from its sheath. It was at least 6 inches long, with a blood gutter and evil-looking serrations along its spine. Dad ripped off the bandit's black ski mask. He was dirtier than we were, his unkempt black beard caked with filth, and his face streaked with dirt and ash. Up until then, I'd thought maybe the bandits were guards, up to some kind of mischief in their off time, but all the guards I'd seen were far cleaner than he was.
"All you got is a knife?" Dad asked.
The guy was silent. Which one of you is in charge?
I ain't telling you she it, he replied with a cocky smile.
Make sure he can't kick you again, Dad said to me.
I moved to the side, out of kicking range. Dad seized the guy's pinky in his fist and bent it sharply upward. It made a sickening snap as it broke, and the bandit screamed. I turned away. This was my father, the same guy who never wanted to watch CSI on TV because it was too gory.
I heard a slap and looked back in time to see Dad pull his hand away from the side of the guy's head. Now quit screaming. What's your name?
Sean, he gasped.
You have any other weapons?
Ain't allowed to bring no others.
Not allowed by who? Why? Who's in charge?
I can't.
Dad grabbed his ring finger. This time he had to work to peel it away from Sean's fist. But it snapped as easily as the pinky. Sean screamed again. My chest heaved, and I tasted bile. You've got 8 more chances to tell me, Dad stated. The calmness of his voice terrified me, and I wasn't the one having my fingers broken.
Cody! Cody's in charge! Sean was panting. Can't bring guns in case this happens and you get them.
Where are you all from?
I was in Anamosa when the volcano blew.
And now? Sean hesitated, and Dad started peeling his middle finger off his fist.
Quit, he yelled. Iowa City!
So you're in one of the prison gangs?
Yeah.
Tears were streaking the dirt on Sean's face.
Which one?
There was a long pause.
Oh, fuck!
He screamed as Dad snapped his middle finger, interrupting whatever he was going to say.
You could have just looked at my tats.
Where? Dad asked.
Over my heart.
Dad looked at me, and I pulled the guy's coat and shirts up. Tattooed across his chest in an ugly blue color in fancy script were the letters DWB inside an outline of the state of Iowa. What's it mean? Dad asked.
Dirty white boys,
Sean managed to say with a strut in his voice that was strange, given the tears streaking his face. You sure qualify on the dirty part, I said. He stunk.
How'd you get into the camp? Dad asked. Just kill me now. Cody'll flens me if he find out I answered that.
Dad peeled his index finger back, and Sean groaned. It snapped with a sound like a branch breaking, and Sean's groan morphed into a scream.
Cody's not here. I am, Dad said.
You're going to tell me everything I want to know, either now or after I've broken your other 6 fingers. Sean was sobbing now.
Just break them all, then.
God damn it, I'm not playing, Dad yelled. Give me that knife, Alex. I couldn't believe what was happening. My teeth clicked as I closed my mouth.
Well, why?
What are you going to do with it?
Now, Dad ordered, his rage barely contained.
I flipped the knife and handed it to him butt first. He grasped the hilt in his right hand and seized the tip of Sean's pinky in his left. The knife flashed as he lowered it, sawing into Sean's finger. The icy ground under my feet reached up through my body, freezing me in place. Dad was still sawing at the finger as Sean screamed. The knife found the break in the pinky and sliced through. Blood poured out the stump, splattering Dad's trousers. He stepped around Sean, got right in his tear-stained face, and hollered,
"You like that, you goddamn cannibal? You want to eat people? Start with yourself."
Dad jammed the bloody finger against Sean's lips, trying to force it down his throat.
"I'll feed you all 10 of your bloody fingers."
My icy immobility shattered, and I lashed out, striking Dad's wrist. The finger went flying, hitting the side of the tent with a thump.
"What the hell?" I shouted. "This isn't us. This isn't you. Stop it."
Dad's face was twisted by some kind of sick, almost gleeful rage.
"Oh, we lost your finger," he cooed to Sean. "I know where we can get 9 more."
He lifted the knife and stepped behind Sean. As he seized Sean's broken ring finger, Sean blubbered.
"No, stop. The DWBs, we have a deal with some of the guards."
A deal? Dad asked. They let us in and out.
In return for what?
We bring them supplies, drugs, booze, food. Let them do the girls sometimes.
What happens to the people you take?
Flynn's most of them. We keep some of the girls to trade.
I thought of Darla. If she was still alive, she was in the hands of a gang like this one. I stumbled out of the tent and vomited.
Through the wall of the tent, I heard Dad saying, "Which guards work with you?"
Sean gave him about a dozen names. Then he asked in a tremulous voice, "You gonna flens me now?"
"I haven't decided," Dad replied. The tent flap rustled, and he strode past me. I hurried to catch up and grabbed his arm.
"What the hell was that?"
"That's the world we live in now." I swung him to face me.
"No, you're blaming the world for choices you made."
Dad tried to pull away. "That's just the way things are now." There was a wet, choking sound behind me and a thump.
What was that?
Jones, taking care of the flenser. He said flenser like it was the vilest curse word ever invented. Jones pushed through the tent flap, carrying the light in one hand and awkwardly dragging Sean in the other. She was bent almost double, straining against his bulk. A trail of blood followed Sean's head. His throat had been cut.
What? Why?
"They're flensers," Dad said flatly. "I'll do whatever it takes to protect those under my care from the likes of him. Whatever. I've got no apologies to make. Now let go of me, son."
"What are you going to do?" I asked.
"Take care of the rest of the flensers," Dad replied. "Go help Jones with that offal."
"So you kill the other three cannibals. What good does it do?"
"Three fewer flensers in the world.
And they send four other guys, or 40. It gets us nothing."
"So what? We let them go?"
Part of me wanted to say forget it. They deserved to die. To let Dad do whatever he wanted to the other three. I didn't really care what happened to them. But I did care about Dad. About what he was becoming. Or had already become. What if we let one of them go? Would they trade something for the other two?
"I don't know," Dad said. "What do they have that we'd even want? An end to the raids on the camp would be a good start. We can't trust the DWBs, and some other gang might start raiding instead."
"Yeah, you know, it's not the gangs, it's Blacklake. We need some way to stop them from letting the gangs into the camp, period.
Can we report them to someone? Call their HQ?" "There's no cell network anymore. Maybe a shortwave radio. I've heard that's how Blacklake stays in touch with Washington."
"Can you keep two of them hidden while we work out a trade?"
"Maybe," Dad shrugged. "Worst comes to worst, we go with Plan A and slit their filthy throats."
The three live flensers were called Trey, Daryl, and Cody, who was the boss. We released Trey with a message. "Bring a shortwave radio transceiver and an extra set of batteries to camp, and we'll free Cody and Daryl. Continue raiding, or tell Blacklake we have captives, and we'll slit the two guys' throats without a second thought." For good measure, Dad retrieved the bloody, dirty pinky stub and told Trey to take it along, to let his bosses know we were serious. After releasing Trey, Dad went to help move our captives to new tents, and I returned to the tent I shared with Dad. I lay down but didn't sleep. It was after dawn by then, and a tent flap let in a sliver of light. It let in a frigid breeze, too, but I didn't have the energy to get up and tie it tighter. Instead, I stared into the light while my thoughts churned my brain to mush. I was still trying to sleep when Dad finally came in.
"You're awake," he said.
"Yeah."
He started to take off his boots.
"Look, you don't owe me an explanation," I said, staring through him toward the sliver of light now blocked by his body.
"I was just doing what I had to do."
"Bullshit! You cut off a guy's finger and tried to make him eat it, Dad."
He turned his back toward me.
"Yeah," he said quietly. I let out a breath I hadn't even realized I'd been holding.
"You remember what I did before the volcano?" Dad said.
"CAD-CAM drafting. So what?"
"I didn't always do that. I've got a civil engineering degree. Got a great job right out of college. just what I'd always wanted to do. Designing sewer systems might not sound like fun to most people, but I loved it. The flow dynamics, the treatment ponds, it all has to come together like the sections of a symphony. Brown water comes in and clean water comes out. There's a beauty to it if you can see it. You never talked about that. No. I designed a huge job in El Mirage, outside Phoenix. Made a mistake calculating the load on a wall. Dropped to zero. Maybe the contractor should have caught it, but they didn't. The cave-in buried three guys up to their necks. The other workers unburied them in less than an hour, but they still died. Crush syndrome. I didn't know. After that, I didn't have any passion for designing the systems anymore. The music of it was gone. I took a crappy job doing CAD/CAM renderings, and I've been doing that ever since. I always thought that was what you wanted to do. I guess it was what I wanted. After El Mirage, anyway. Dad paused for a long time. He was sitting hunched in the front of the tent, facing away from me. Those three guys who died, they had families, wives and children. I was responsible. I could have prevented it. I didn't know what to say. I waited out the silence. If I made a mistake doing the CAD/CAM drawings, the architect was responsible for catching it. I wasn't in charge. But I didn't make mistakes. My drawings were perfect, the best. I have turned down three promotions in the last 10 years. I didn't want the responsibility. When I got here, I helped your mom with the school, taught math. But I wasn't really into it. It was just easier to do what Janice wanted instead of arguing with her. But there was one student, Karen, 16, energetic, brilliant. I was teaching her what little integral calculus I could remember. She told me she was worried. She'd heard rumors about girls disappearing. I shrugged off her concerns. Dad lowered his head. She hasn't been seen in 4 months. Responsibility is a cruel bitch. She comes for you whether you want it or not, and people are dying here regardless of what I do, Alex. He swiveled at the hips toward me, his face silhouetted, all sharp black angles against the tent opening. But it's still my job to protect them. If I had to cut off my own finger and eat it, I'd do that, whatever it takes, whatever. Some things are beyond our control, I said, no matter what we do. I sat up and hugged him. I still couldn't reconcile the placid, benignly neglectful father I'd known with this mercurial maniac I had wrapped in my arms. The disaster had warped the landscapes of our minds, perhaps even more than it had altered the physical landscape. When, after a long while, we broke the embrace and laid down side by side on our bedrolls, neither of us slept. Instead, we stared silently at the tiny sliver of light still peeking from the outside world into the darkness within our tent. Chapter 65. I found Ben in the breakfast line.
I need to talk to you, I whispered.
You are talking to me, he replied in a normal voice.
Talk about what? Alyssa asked.
Escaping, I whispered back. Escaping is not a difficult problem, Ben said. There are vulnerabilities.
Ben,
Alyssa whispered urgently. Our neighbors in line had turned almost in unison to stare at us.
Later, after breakfast.
The information is classified as need to know only?
Yes, only Alex needs to know.
After breakfast, the three of us huddled behind a tent, out of the wind, while Ben explained his plan. The guards changed twice each night around midnight and 4 a.m. Ben had observed them congregating at the guard hut during their shift change, the perfect opportunity to escape at the other end of camp. The only problem? How would we cross the fence? A bolt cutter would have been the obvious solution, but none of us had any idea where we'd get one of those. Ben's other idea was to build a canvas sling about 20 feet long and 2 feet wide. The middle would be reinforced with a dozen layers of canvas. We'd toss it over the fence so that the reinforced part overlaid the razor wire. Then we'd tie both sides to the chain link part of the fence and climb over via hand and foothold sewn into the sling. So we needed to dismantle a tent, one of the old types made of heavy-duty canvas. Dad was asleep, so I went looking for Mom. I found her crouched in a tent, feeding an older woman who was too sick to stand in the food line. "You need any help?" I asked. "Sure." She handed me a bowl of boiled wheat. "See if Jane wants to eat anything." She gestured at the other woman in the tent. I took the bowl from her and crouched, shuffling deeper into the tent. "You think you can eat?" I said to Jane.
"Reckon so,"
she replied in a low, rough voice. She started trying to push herself upright. "Let me help you." I put my hand behind her shoulders and lifted, jamming the bedding in behind her to keep her partly upright. I took a spoonful of gruel and held it to her lips. "Mom," I said, "I need a tent."
"Your father snoring or something?" she replied.
"No, it's not that. I need to..." How was I going to explain this? I didn't really want to lie to her, not that she'd believe me anyway. "I need to make something out of one of the tents, a heavy canvas one."
"Make what?"
"A sling to throw across the fence."
Mom swiveled toward me, slopping some of the gruel across the cheek of her patient. "You just got here. We're finally back together and you..."
"So come with me," I said. "That's why Darla and I came back to Iowa in the first place, to find you and bring you home to Uncle Paul's, to Rebecca. We'll try to escape as soon as we know the girls here are safe, and we'll go back to Uncle Paul's together, not gallivanting off after some... Without Darla, I wouldn't be here. Wouldn't be alive. I'm going after her, with or without you. You're too young to... I'm not a kid. It's hopeless. It's not hopeless. I need a heavy canvas tent, and I'd like your help. There are some things we just can't do. We decide what we can do. That's the way it was before the volcano, and it's still true." I fought to keep my hand steady as I continued spooning gruel into Jane's mouth. "Things are just a lot harder. Things are different. We have to make hard choices now." "Which is exactly what I'm asking you to do. Make a hard choice. Help me go after Darla."
I can't."
"You done?" I asked Jane. She nodded. "Me too." I left the tent without looking back. Chapter 66. I napped uneasily the rest of the day. Every time I woke up, I looked to where Dad slept alongside me, thinking about waking him and asking him to help me get a tent. Every time I waited, figuring I'd be better off if I asked him after he woke up on his own. I hoped he'd be more likely to say yes. But when I got up for dinner, he was gone. I looked for him all evening, but didn't catch up to him until well after dark. His answer was the same as my mother's. Maybe she'd gotten to him first. They didn't have any canvas tents to spare, didn't want to try to escape yet, and weren't going to go looking for Darla even if or when they did escape. We argued for what felt like at least an hour, but our positions were calcified. Any pair of statues facing off in a public park might have made more progress than we did. Our argument ended suddenly when a distant scream pierced the air. No sooner had we started running toward it than two more screams in different places shattered the stillness of the night. We glanced at each other. "Go wake up the day shift," Dad ordered. "Right." I reversed course, sprinting for the tents where the prefect slept. By the time I got back with reinforcements, the whole camp was in an uproar. A flood of refugees was pouring into the center of the camp, fleeing the crescendoing screams and chaos. Dad was yelling to be heard over the noise, dispatching teams of prefects to search for whatever or whoever was causing the ruckus. Dad grouped me with two others, Jones and Altemeyer, and told us to sweep the perimeter of the camp along the fence. We set off at a run. By the time we got to the fence, it seemed like the commotion had mostly moved deeper inside the camp. I scanned constantly back and forth as we ran, hyper-alert for any movement. As we passed the gate, I saw four Blacklake guys, double the usual contingent, leaning against the guard shack outside the fence. "Why don't you do something?" I yelled. They laughed, and one of them pantomimed shooting me. I turned away, and we ran on.